Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. My name is Catherine Halpin, and it's my great pleasure to host this Blog Talk Radio show today. Coach Conversations is sponsored by the International Coach Federation Phoenix Chapter. It's produced by Anna Malikian, PhD, ACC, and an elite-level Book Yourself Solid Coach. It's hosted by me, Catherine Halpin, MCC. You can visit our show page at blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix. There you can find links to our website to find more about us. And you can also, if you're listening to the show live and have a computer nearby, please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. You'll find a post on this show, and we're going to use this as our virtual chat room during the next hour. If you have comments, questions, or insights, please write them there. Even if you're listening to the recording of the show, visit our page, facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. We would love to hear from you. And our guest today is Adria A. Trohill, MCC, MA, PhD, ABD. Adria is known, that's a lot of initials.
I'm getting there.
Yeah. I've known Adria for over a decade, and I love and adore her, and I'm so excited to interview her today. She's known for her integrity, her leading-edge thinking, and her highly intuitive and creative approach. She is a founding faculty member and currently dean and director of Adler International's Learning's Coaching Certificate Program worldwide. With over 5,000 individual and team coaching hours under her belt, Adria has helped transform the burgeoning practice of coaching into an internationally recognized bona fide profession. As a pioneer in the field, she has consistently pushed the boundaries of the coaching profession to enable leaders to increase their knowledge and awareness as well as develop new skills. Adria is a four-time winner of the PRISM Award for achieving outstanding performance through leadership coaching and leadership team coaching. Her clients are senior executives, leadership teams, and corporate coaches across North America. Adria is an innovative creator of tools and processes for high-performing teams. That is a complete understatement. She is a committed educator. She's a passionate supporter of coaches in training as well as new coaches entering the profession. Adria is dedicated to holding high standards for herself, her clients, and her students alike. Her living systems approach to coaching, collaborative work groups, and intact teams has enabled people at all levels of organizations to increase the performance capacity. If you're listening live or if you're listening later, you'll definitely want to go to Adria's website. It's positive track coaching. I'm going to spell that since I've butchered it here. It's for positive tracking coaching. So it's www.positrakcoaching.com. There you'll learn a lot more about Adria. And we're so happy and so grateful, Adria, for you making time for us today to talk about your living systems approach. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, no,
excited
of course.
To be here.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day. So we always like to know a little bit about people, where they grew up, what kind of family they came from. Did you grow up on a farm? Did you grow up in an urban environment? So just tell us a little bit, start at the beginning and tell
sure.
us about yourself.
I came from parents that were immigrants to Canada, and my father was Czechoslovakian and my mother was Italian, quite a combination. And we started out in Toronto, they did, but then we ended up in a small town, so I grew up basically in a small town. I went to high school in a very small town, very small, no movies, no nothing. And so I was absolutely delighted to get out of there and get to a big city. So I went to Montreal and I went to McGill and I just loved it. I studied music, performance.
Mm.
And I enjoyed that. And my first husband got transferred to Toronto. It was during the time when there was a lot of issues politically in Quebec. So I ended up in Toronto and knew I could never get in to compete with the music group here. I mean, it's a very competitive, tight field, and you have to know people. Well, I didn't know anybody that was in the business that I was in here. So I went back to school and took my master's in psychology and started my PhD. I'm trying to finish it now because I didn't finish it then. And then at some point, I was deemed a coach. I didn't even know. This is a true story. I was hired by a 10-member management team, and I accepted without even knowing what it meant. And so coaching in Toronto was not where coaching was in the States. So then I had to run home and get my computer out and say, what exactly have I signed up for here? So that's how I started.
Now, what year was that, Audrey? Because I
that was 1994.
Okay.
That was time ago. I'm getting older now. But, you know, I hadn't any training at that point. We didn't really know about training here. But I really, and I know you are too, I'm committed to the professionalism of coaching. So as soon as I could, I enrolled in my own personal coach training. So and became certified. So
now,
that was.
I met you through the Adler School of Coaching. Is that where you got your original training, or
no? I was one of the creators of that training.
Okay, that makes sense.
There were five of us. I wasn't the only one. There were five of us. No, I was CTI trained.
Okay.
And we wanted to have something that was Canadian, and of course, you know, creating something new. We wanted to have a different. Characteristic to the kind of work we created. And so we created a more, how would you put it, more rigorous in some ways, and lots of tools and different applications right from the get-go, so that we had a week, and we still do, on coaching in the context of work. And then we have leadership, creativity, metaphor, you know, a variety of different applications, because
right.
we thought it was important.
Right.
Yeah.
I like to tell the story about that. In 1995, so the year behind you, I met Thomas Leonard through a magazine article with an 800 number, and I called it, and he answered the phone. And there were at that time two coach training schools, Coach U and CTI, and he didn't bother to tell me about CTI.
Yeah.
So I signed up for Coach U, but it was there and quite robust, as I understand it, back in 1995.
Sure.
So. Now, what kind of work were you doing as that got you into that 10-person leadership team coaching engagement before you knew what coaching was?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I ended up, after I did my master's in psychology, working as an acting psychologist for an oncology unit, one of the hospitals here. And I really did love that work. I'd had too much experience, actually, with cancer. And I enjoyed the work. However, in 1994, I had to leave because of personal things were happening in my family, and actually I lost my sisters at that time. So I decided it wasn't such a great idea for me to be working there because,
right.
you know, it was too much to have my whole life filled with oncology. And so I'd worked with a psychologist here in the hospital who started his own consulting company. So he wanted me to go and work with him, and I held out for a long time, but then finally I said, okay, I would do it, because I could see that at that point I had two young kids. I was on my own. I couldn't stay a student, even with scholarships.
Right.
Wasn't enough money. So that's how it started.
Right.
I ran their EAP program, and then I became a consultant for them.
I love this story. And we have so many points of contact through coaching and the ICF and the Adler School of Coaching, but now I found another one. I've done quite a bit of work with in the field of oncology with the physician executives who have started what they are now calling supportive care for healing programs.
Wow.
Yes, those.
That's so great.
Yes.
Well,
I
worked for a number of years as a senior consultant, but what I missed was the creativity. So that's how I had left in 1992. I left that company and started very apprehensively out on my own because my parents were artists, by the way, and they were entrepreneurs, right? So I was used to being an entrepreneur and used
right.
to dealing with the stress of no money. I know they say it's up and down. When I was a kid, it was mostly down. But anyway.
Sure, as artists.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how it happened. And then 2 years later, somebody called me and said, we have a team without a president, and they're running the company, and we've been looking for a coach, and we've decided that you're going to be it. I'd done some work with them, but honestly, I didn't know what it, I had no clue what they were doing.
Right, right. But wasn't that a great opportunity for you, of course, but a great moment in the history of coaching when you got introduced to coaching because you've been such a, your bio said, such a pivotal contributor to helping all of us turn this into a real profession with professional standards and competencies and credentialing and
I think it was just serendipity for me, but I, you know how I don't know whether you know Parker Palmer talks about are we living the right life we were meant to live, you know, and I at that point wasn't really the life that wanted to, I wasn't living the life that wanted to live in me, but I certainly feel I am now.
Oh, love that, love that. Well, I'm fascinated. I've been on some of your webinars and teleseminars on team coaching, but I'm fascinated to hear you talk about your living systems approach. So tell us first what is your definition of the living systems approach to coaching?
Yeah, and it is a living systems approach for team and group coaching. So the definition, this is my definition. And I just want to qualify before we get into things here. Whatever I'm going to say is my opinion only. I'm not saying I'm right or that there's no other way to do things. This is the way I do it. So,
right. Good. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying.
My definition says it's a results-oriented process that takes teams from where they are to where they want to be. And it's a method that transforms groups and teams through conversations and experiential activities that evolves specifically for the team's unique context, mandate, or composition. So one of the distinctions of this approach is that everything we're doing in the sessions relates to the team's mandate, the actual work, because that was one of the things. When I started out, it was when there was all this team building and team, you know, outward bound things. And I mean,
right.
They're great. I mean, I'm not putting those down at all. However, I worked with this team, and I learned a lot in this team. I worked with them for 2.5 years, my first team. I saw that they couldn't extrapolate that into the business.
Right.
So what I wanted to do is figure out a way to work with them so that we would actually be working on business issues, but also using, you know, experiential methods, creating tools, thinking, you know, creating and thinking.
Right. I love that because I too, you know, I came from being a CPA, so I was never a trainer or facilitator except within my own work environments, and always had some just almost a physical reaction and resistance to quote-unquote team building and outward bound and those kinds of things because I couldn't figure out how they related. And so if I couldn't figure out, I didn't think other people could. So I'm so I love your definition, and I love your focus on making it relate to what they're, you know, what are the business objectives here?
That's right. What has to happen? And, you know, in the beginning, it was trial and error, really was. I mean, I didn't have
of
a recipe.
Course.
There was nobody to teach me anything.
Right.
But I had a really good grounding at the organization I worked at in terms of I learned a lot of things. And then it was really, I think I'm a pretty good observer. I think people would say that about me. And it was observation, action, reflection, learning, basically.
Right.
Like
imagine that, a coach approach.
That's right.
Well, say some more about, in addition to the results focus and the actual work, what are the other guiding principles for working this way?
You know, I think some of the things are, you know, really maintaining an abundance frame. For example, that's very, very important no matter what's happening. And then engaging the spirit. You know, we don't talk a lot about the spirit in our work, but it is about engaging the spirit because if the spirit isn't engaged, people don't work well.
Right.
So it's also surfacing the strengths. I mean, these are some of the lenses, I would say, that I look through and that I teach people to look through, coaching to foster connection and trust between team members, capturing a vision and both a being vision and a doing vision. It's not just a doing vision. It's a vision of how we want to be and be seen in the world. And integrating of skills, I mean, I think supporting new identity, I think that's an important piece that often gets overlooked. So, you know, when you start working with a team, anybody, when I start working with a team, I want to use empowering language here, it's important to know that once you start working with them, they change. So it's seeing them, being able to see them and their changes and reinforcing that. So just like we do on one-on-one, acknowledging what you're seeing and acknowledging their efforts, acknowledging their commitment to moving forward and helping them that develop habits or ways of working together that really internalize the change and make it visible. So it's something I talk a lot about. How do we make whatever we're changing visible to other people?
So what I think you've done here, Audrey, is laid out about a 3-year curriculum. So I'd like to take a step back and go deeper with some of these guiding principles because they're just so, so rich. So say more about the abundance frame. Do you mean like the frame of mind or
it's everything. It's a mindset. It's assuming, as we do, that people are resourceful and creative and assuming that team is, rather than, I never go in looking, drilling down into the negative stuff. It's not that I step over things because I do create opportunities for emotions to be expressed, but it's not the focus. It's more the creation of what we want rather than looking at what we have that we don't want. And believing it's going to work.
Yes, having that confidence. I say we see what we expect to see and we hear what we expect to hear.
Right.
Now let's talk about this big elephant in the room, engaging the spirit. So do you actually use that language with your clients or is it just your mindset?
Well, sometimes I do. You know, it's really, a lot of people are writing about engagement and being an engaging leader and how to do that. So the research also showing us that telling people what to do is a mistake. And so usually when you get, there's two kinds of teams. I get teams that are already great and want to be better. I get teams that are in trouble and they're not feeling so great about themselves. And those teams sometimes don't believe they know what to do, but they're running. And what we do is, I mean, this approach slows things down, provides tools and experiential exercises for them to do. So increasing their awareness, giving them time to practice new skills, and thinking, I mean, I can't even emphasize how much I believe we have to stop and think. We have to stop and smell the roses, they say, but we have to stop and think.
Right.
And it's so important to do that. And then when they when the teams like that are being coached, we can believe, and here's the abundant frame, that they actually know best, because sometimes that's a challenge. And even
right.
if they don't know, they know how to create it or figure it out. You know, the
right.
things in their way are the lack of trust, you know, limiting beliefs, inability or lack of time to think things through, I think is a big one. That's some of the things, and I think the coach can work with them to help them get past that. And they're the ones that are in the trenches, so they do know what has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's self-leadership,
well,
right? Really.
Right, exactly. That's what I call it, self-leadership. I used to call it self-management, but really it's self-leadership.
Yeah.
And
I
love when you talk about the teams that are in trouble are the ones that are running. And that keeps them from being able to stop and think, in my humble opinion.
It does, and I think another thing about it is, I believe, and I know people won't agree with me, but some people won't, but there is an I in team. I mean, I never would say there isn't, and I think that it's important to bring out the I in the team. And using this mode, the coach is managing back and forth, from the individual to the collective, back and forth, depending on what the context requires. But certainly people want to be seen and heard. And then collectively they want to be seen and heard. I've just found if you don't go to the individual seeing and hearing, it's very difficult to make that leap into the unity that we all know should be there.
Right. Well, talk more about surfacing the strengths. How do you go about doing that? Do you use a strength finder test, or do you?
I actually don't use any of those. I do use, and I've started using the TILT 365, which there's also a variation for teams. I haven't ever used it yet, but I will be using it because I'm certified. You know, it's about really paying attention, listening for the strengths and noticing energy shifts, noticing the strengths that they have. And also, the strengths emerge in the activities that the coach creates for them to do. And so it's up to the coach, in my opinion, to observe and notice out loud. And I always say this is about out loud noticing the strengths that they have as a group and challenging them to let go of any assumptions they have that they can't do this or this will never work or whatever. A lot of assumptions happen. And they get away. And also, it's not a linear process. So I think Faith and Marita say the system reveals itself, which I've always thought that was a brilliant way of putting it. The strengths, so do the strengths. The strengths reveal themselves. And so your job is to see them.
Right. That's as the coach and facilitator, that's our job.
That's right.
Right. Well, beautifully articulated. I've always said that I've just done that intuitively, but I haven't been able to articulate it nearly as beautifully as you. So thank you for that great language.
Yeah.
And
thank
I'd love to hear your approach to coaching people to foster those connections and build that trust. Because I say without the connection, then there's no amount of, focusing on results that will ever be enough.
You know, yeah, I hear you. I think that if things are set up in a certain way, the connection naturally occurs. You know, there's no question that the coach will have to do some work and bring in some tools and exercises. And from the very, very beginning, I used a tool, and it's called How the World Looks from My Chair. I used that. The very first time I took this team out in 1994, I had no idea what I was doing. Believe me, I had no idea. But anyway, I thought, well, this could be a way that people could share and I could learn, right, same time.
Right.
What their perspective was on what was happening to them in the organization. And, you know, when people hear things like that, they start to see that there are connections between them. And they start to see things about the other people they're with that they didn't know. So it's about building trust, too. In order to build trust, we have to have openness, right? I mean, I will trust you if I can predict what you're going to do in a situation, and I know that you're not going to stab me in the back, for example. And we've had conversation about that. So it's almost by forging over the coaching process, forging connections with people, having people work together, discuss together, having the team discuss together, having them participate in activities together. One of my favorite activities is I didn't create this one, is called the book cover exercise. It was an old consulting tool. A lot of people online probably know that one. And having people do that and then bring it into the team. And people learn so much on a personal level. You know, I think what's happening in organization is that we're missing the personal level, right? And basically, what we're doing is we're alienating ourselves from other people. And the way the system works so often alienates people from each other. So when we can get things out in the open, it makes a big difference. I mean, it's about working differently. You know, I think also it's about standing up for what's real. A lot of very powerful and credible voices have been urging us to do that. like Margaret Wheatley, Peter Senge, David White. We could go on. And then the question I have is, so why aren't we listening? Why do we collude to the old ways of doing things? I think it's so difficult and challenging for coaches, and I find this in the training, to go into an organization without a prescription. So the way of working with this is you don't have a prescription. You have different activities and tools that you can use, and you have some basic exercises that people involve themselves in, and from there emerges material that you use in your coaching. So it's not linear, right? It's very unlinear, and I think people that need to have a lot of structure will struggle with this initially, not. But I'm with David White. I have no trouble crossing the unknown sea, and I think that was how I started. I mean, I had to, it was definitely unknown, and there was nobody to go to, or there was no standard out there saying, you know, well, that. In fact, the people around here that I knew said, it's impossible to coach a whole group of people all together. You're going to have to do it one-on-one. And I said, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
You're going to do it one-on-one, you're going to end up with one-on-ones, individuals, and you're not going to go to the collective. So it was important. It was important for me to be able to deal with the group as a collective, and this is what I did. And it worked.
It worked, and it's worked beautifully.
It did.
You referenced briefly your training. So tell us more about the training that you do with people that want to do this kind of team coaching.
Well, I have a coach training program. It's a 4-day program where people come and we do a lot of the exercises. We treat them as a team coming together. And then, you know, there's often opportunities to mentor them as they go out in the world and try and do it. But people are also surprised at how easy it can be. And even when there's a conflict, it doesn't have to be a crisis. You know, the team might see it as a crisis, but the coach mustn't see it as a crisis, which gets back to the empowering view, right? The mindset, this is just a little blip on the radar. What do we have to do? What wants to happen? My friend Fran Fisher says that, what wants to happen here? And being able to see that and not collude with the old ways.
Right. Not collude with the old ways. I love that.
And the old conservative ways, the safer ways, which actually do work up to a point, but they won't work beyond that point.
Right. Exactly. They'll get us so far, but they will not get us to where people want to go today.
No.
Well, I want to cover two things before we move on. I want to give people your website where they can find out more information about this kind of training and team coaching, going through a team experience. Again, it's www.positivetrackcoachingandconsulting. So it's www.positivetrackcoaching.com, P-O-S-I-T-R-A-K coaching.com. And there you can find out lots of information about Audria, but especially about her coach training program that she's developed for people that want to replicate her successes using this living systems approach to coaching and coaching teams. And then the other thing that you said, I always jokingly say isolation is never a good thing. And I'd like to hear, you made reference to that just a minute ago, but you know that you know, people are not living in a vacuum. They're not operating as individual contributors out there. No matter what level you are in an organization, you're working in a team environment. And so just say a little bit more about that if you could. The risk if we don't approach it, you know, from a team or living systems perspective.
Well, I think that if we don't approach it that way, we limit our success. You know, lots of organizations have been successful. There's a book called The Living Company, which I absolutely love. It was written in 1980, but this is by a guy named Ari DeGias, and he analyzed all the big Fortune 500 companies and predicted that most of them wouldn't last more than so many years, and then he showed people how that was true. They didn't make it. And so he basically says in there, and of course I'm a rebel, so I like what he says, right?
Everybody
might not like what he says, that all these, you know, performance enhancement, this and that, and the systems for this, and they don't work very well. They don't work very well. But, you know, we still have them there, and we give lip service to collaboration, right? Most people would say it's a good thing, because
right.
five heads are better than four, and four are better than three, right? Three are better than
right.
two, et cetera.
Right.
But the system isn't set up to support that kind of work. So the truth is being ignored in a way. I don't know why. I mean, it's for me, I just couldn't work that other way. Like when I started out, what I saw, and I was working as a consultant for Geller Shipps, Shabbat Skin Weiss here, what I saw was that the meetings weren't working. I mean, people weren't communicating. When they got together on project teams, it was very non-productive rather than productive. There's lots of controls and lots of like Gantt charts and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
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 Those of you who know what a Gantt chart is, I remember
right.
having a very fascinating conversation with an engineer who's a woman. And we were working on a project, so here's an example. And it was 4 years behind, if you can believe it.
Oh, and yes, I can certainly believe that, 4 years.
Yep, technical project. So I'm in there working with the team because the leader thought I'd help them. And mm-hmm. all she could say is, but we're not following the Gantt chart. And she said, what about the Gantt chart? I said, look, you've been following the Gantt chart for 4 years.
Right. It hasn't gotten
where are you now?
Right.
Anyway, it's that. It's just, you know, what's the true way? And I think coaching has proven something with the one-on-one coaching and with the group coaching that people rise up when they're empowered to do so.
Right.
And they become fulfilled and high-performing leaders. And if they're not empowered, they don't. It's as simple as that.
Right. Well, in this context of the living systems approach, share with us what you mean by an emergent process and what is the emergent process in this, using this approach?
No, it's also in this context, right? And it goes back to what I said about the process is not linear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about actual procedures and processes that you use, and you do go in with a frame. So I teach people how to go in what we call an agenda, but it's not what normally becomes an agenda. It's not A, B, C, D, E, this is what we do. We have a frame and theme for the day, and as they do different things, what happens in the team dynamic in the moment, things emerge from that. The coach learns things from that by listening and observing what's happening there. And then you follow the energy. So if something comes
right.
up, you drop what you're doing, which is, you know, I think the more conservative approach is, well, we have to go to C because we just did B.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I would say, why don't you go to P or T? Or, well, who says you have to do all that other stuff? You know, because you don't actually need to do that stuff. And I can give you many examples, but here's one that's a good one. I was hired to coach a manufacturing of boxes, you know, different packaging companies.
Sure.
And there was a general manager and a regional manager, and the general manager was at the plant, you know, the leader of the leadership team, and the regional manager was the leader of all the general managers. And this particular general manager and the regional manager hated each other. Like they couldn't work together. And they brought in people, and very good people, who were experts in emotional intelligence, and they got that kind of training and coaching. And
uh-huh.
they were at the end because the guy, and his name was Steve, he was going to go. He just couldn't tolerate it. Okay, so they brought me in, and what are we going to do differently? And so I started with, you know, how does the world look from my chair? And I brought the regional manager into this team for this this coaching process.
Okay.
That went on over 6 months, right? So we talked about the vision, and we talked about different things, and they did different exercises. And then about the third session, they were saying, well, you know, one of our biggest issues is communication. One of my favorite questions when somebody says that is, what is it you do not know about communicating? And so let's have a look there first. Well, it wasn't that at all. It was the impact of the communication, the impact on the regional manager and on the people that are in the team. So, you know, I think one thing I'm good at, one thing I'm not so good at is the structure piece, but what I'm really good at is the creativity part. So
right.
I created a simple little exercise, and it was a piece of paper, and they put a line down the middle. On the one side, it says, take me up, puts me down. So I asked the team, I said, we're going to go around, and I gave them a few minutes to write first. I want everybody to share. What is it that people say that really brings you up and, you know, and feeds your spirit, and what is it that shuts you down? So the first two people followed the directions. I mean, it was very straightforward. And the team learns, you see. So they're on a learning journey. So they're learning about their colleagues. And they're also building trust with their colleagues. And so, but when I think of the third or first, the third person or the fourth person to speak was the regional manager.
Uh-huh.
So he says, I want to start with what takes me down. So he told us a story about when he was in high school, that the principal, for whatever reason, good intentions gone awry, in my opinion, called his mother in and told his mother that he would not be able to go to university. He shouldn't even try because he just did not have what it took. And he was telling the story, and at some point, the tears were running down his face, honestly. And this was a big, blustery guy. Like, we're talking manufacturing. He wasn't one of these executive suits. Anyway, he was clearly in pain. And he said he never forgot it. And he said it to this day, it haunts him. And here we have, and here I've got a team, and I don't know what to do to fix what's happening here. And it's just what the principal says, you know, I don't have what it takes. Well, when he said that, you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And what happened was, suddenly, these people that had been railing against this guy developed compassion for him, right? Developed empathy for him.
Right.
Could see his vulnerability and could see his pain. That had such a big impact on the team. You know, I made it a short story. He made it a long story, and he talked about buying his first car and how hard that was and how he finally got into university by being an adult learner. But the whole team shifted, and we only did one more session after that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, that's the kind of thing that
right.
can happen.
Right.
Would
all the barriers.
That happened in the day-to-day of running back and forth and trying to get to the results? No.
Right.
But did it produce
right.
results? Yes.
Right. So that's what you call what the world looks like from my seat exercise.
Well, that's how it started. But, yes, it's part of that. But that's what I call the coach thinking in the moment and creating something in the moment that brings out what needs to be brought out. So that's the emergence of this story.
Yes.
Emergency of vulnerability in the team.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is so powerful. Talk about more about, I've heard you before talk about the inside-out approach. What do you mean by that?
I mean exactly what we mean on one-on-one coaching. You have to engage somebody internally. You can't put Band-Aids on things. So I like to use this metaphor. is scuba diving instead of snorkeling, basically. Mm-hmm. We're going to the deeper places, and we emphasize that at Adler. And we get down right into what's going on internally. And my own self, and I have done this for a long time, I work a lot with energies with the team. Mm-hmm. I never got around to take any training in this area, but just intuitively, we can all feel tightness, and we can all feel openness, and we can all feel guardedness. I mean, I think we can.
And, right, I believe that too.
Yeah. So it's about how the coach gives feedback and how the coach encourages people to notice the energy and the impact of their energy. And really, I think, you know, in terms of that, for anybody that's interested in that, I think Silsby's book on presence-based coaching is a great book to read if you've never worked with energy and presence, because he goes into more detail than I ever go into. But I picked up a couple of exercises myself from his book, and I think it's a great book. And it's just expanding our awareness as coaches and bringing that into our work, right?
Right, exactly, exactly, exactly.
I'm noticing it's 4:15, and I don't know whether there are any questions at this point, but if there aren't, we can keep on going. But if there are,
let me turn it over to Anna Maliki and our producer to check in on that.
No, we don't have any callers in the live call at the moment for questions.
Okay.
So good. Thanks, Asha, for monitoring that. Well, following up on the presence-based coaching, say more about one of your guiding principles for this living systems approach to team coaching is people having a vision of being and doing. Say more about what you mean by that.
Okay, sure. I started working with that with this very first team, because at that point, and I honestly, this was me not really being called a coach, but really not being a professional coach, because I had absolutely no, and that's a big no, training. So I was just finding my way. But what I noticed is the way the team worked initially, I couldn't imagine they got any work done. I mean, it wasn't a surprise to me that they needed a coach. It would have been more surprising if they'd really been producing, like, at a high level, because they just didn't behave and interact in a way that was conducive for that. So I got the idea of developing a vision of who we're going to be as well as what we're going to do. So, you know, companies have visions. We're going to be the whatever. But they don't talk about the vision for who we will be. So I got them working on that. Who will they be, and who will people see when they look up at them? I think that one of the questions, I still remember the looks on their faces, and one of the questions I asked was, what's the strategic advantage of you being a team? Well, what do you mean? What do you mean, strategic advantage of us being a team? Nobody had ever thought about that, that there is a purpose for having a leadership team.
Right.
It gets back to what you said about silos versus collective.
Right.
If it works great in silos, why bother with the collective?
Right.
Right.
Right, right.
I mean, no, it doesn't work so well in silos.
Right. In isolation.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent, 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 excellent point. What's the strategic advantage of your leadership team? What's the purpose of your leadership team? One of the things, I do a lot of work around governance in organizations, and I try to get every team, every committee, every council to do a charter as if they were, a committee of the board of directors, and they were, they had, regulatory requirements to do a charter. But I think every team at every level needs to have a charter. What's our purpose? What's our level of authority? What are the outcomes we're supposed to be driving to? My clients show up in meetings of committees. They don't even know what the purpose of the meeting is, why they're serving on the committee. Are they the best person to serve on that committee?
Uh-huh. Well, good work. It sounds like you're doing good work. I mean, it gets back what I hear you're thinking. You know, it's like strategic thinking. I mean, I've been asked to do that, and I've done it, work with people on developing strategic thinking. But really, before you can think strategically, you have to learn how to think, right?
Right.
So actually
right.
performance of any kind teaches you how to think. And certainly being at the keyboard when you're working with three layers or acting, any kind of performance, you have to be able to think or you can't do it.
Right,
it,
exactly.
It doesn't work on automatic pilot, in other words.
No, autopilot doesn't work. So how do you get people to slow down and learn how to think?
I slow them down. I just say, let's slow down here.
Right.
I think it's
right,
also
right.
by chance. Well, I was working with a guy today, and I said, how about looking back at the history? Because he's talking about they're not doing very well. And I said, he said they'd, I'm not coaching him on his team, by the way, but I'm just but the same applies, one-on-one or team. So he said, the last two quarters, we haven't met our target producing. It was it's a mining company. And so I said, what were the assumptions that you made? So that kind of a question gets people to think, and mainly because, believe it or not, some people in organizations that are working in teams do not know what an assumption is.
Right.
Because
right.
they're not trained. I mean, we are trained on listening for assumptions, right? That's what
right.
But sometimes they don't even know, so they make assumptions. And I think there's a lot of assumptions made on things about everything from soup to nuts. Like, this is going to be delivered on this date. Well, how do you know that?
Right.
A little
right.
bit of Byron Katie in here helps.
Yes, yes. I love her. Very good. Very good. Well, I think we have time for one more question. And I think what I'd be interested to know, because I really want to make sure that our listeners, both online and offline later, have a full grasp of the training that you provide and that they could plug into. And I understand that you're offering a discount on that training if when they register, they contact you, they use the phrase ICF Phoenix. So,
yes.
So again, if you're interested in that, you can find out more at positracoaching.com. But talk a little
or
bit.
Connect. Sorry to interrupt you, Catherine.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Actually, the fine art of intervening, right? That's what it was.
Yeah, right. The fine art of intervening.
They could connect with Laura Atwood in Phoenix. So the Adler School in Southwest is the Adler School in Phoenix, because we're.
Yeah.
I'm hoping with that. That's what I don't want to drag people all the way up here to Toronto. So
right.
It'll be a 4-day course, and people will have to go there. And
right.
We haven't set a date, so we start to get people that are interested. We will set a date. And what they get, I mean, it's 4 days of training, and we do a lot of role-playing because in this situation we have to, you know, and we had play out different scenarios, and people practice coaching by themselves in pairs. I try to coach in pairs, and I facilitate with another trained team coach, both to model the process, but also because there's more to hold. It's harder to hold the space when you're dealing with 10 or 12 people.
Right.
And, I got lost. I was making a wonderful point, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, it might come
oh,
back.
Oh, the training.
The training,
I'm talking about
yeah.
the training. Thanks. And then there's a number of tools there that I give, soft copy, and people are welcome to use, and I allow them to use everything, and all I ask is they title it the approach that they mentioned. It's a living system approach. That is a copyright that I hold, trademark.
Good.
And because it's a brand. And so I believe that the more we work this way, the better the world of business and the world of teams would be.
Yes,
and
I totally
so that's
agree.
What my main goal is, to get this out into the world.
Great. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And so once again, for our listeners, ICF Phoenix is a code word to get you a discount for that training when you sign up. So tell us about why you have such a strong commitment to the International Coach Federation.
I will. But before, I just want to mention it's pre-approved for 23.5 credits.
Oh, my gosh, that's outstanding. 23.5
yeah, on that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm committed to ICF because I believe that in order for coaching to be a profession, and I want it to be, I think people feel because it's out there and there's so many coaches, that automatically is going to make it a profession. But I don't believe it is, although I think it's somewhat controversial. Perhaps it will, perhaps it won't. But I think that this is a unified body that's doing its very best to take a stand for coaching in the world. And if we want to be coaches, I mean, where are we? Like, we have to be there, right? I was president here in Toronto for a few years and did a lot, and we created the PRISM Award here in Toronto. I've just got to say that. But
thank you.
I mean, if we don't do it, who will do it? If we don't make sure that the standards are put into place, who's going to? I mean, we're the people that are in a position to do it,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm right. And I also believe, I'm a strong believer in doing what you can, not waiting for somebody else to do it. So I don't think anybody would accuse me of sitting around waiting for somebody else to do things.
Right. Well, beautifully stated. And again, the purpose of our coach conversations, our Blog Talk radio show that's now 2.5 years old, has always been to try to build up the level of professionalism and build up the profession of coaching. And we've been fortunate to get people like you, Audrea, that have been willing to share their stories and their experiences for the betterment of our coaching, our professional coaching community. So thank you so much for that. Yes, and for all that you've done to help develop this. Now, I want to do two more things before we wrap up, but is there anything else that I have not asked you that you'd like to share that you think is important to share? We'd love to hear anything else that you think.
Well, I could go on and on. I mean,
of course.
I think the one thing that I would share is that we seem in, I'm talking about the business world, but and there's other worlds where teams exist, so I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. But our lives revolve around the economy. Even mine does. And I think we need to look at, is this the way we really want to go? And is this the best way to go? I'm a firm believer that if you do what you love, the money does follow. And with a caveat that you might have to work a lot harder than you think. And it might take a lot longer than you think. But it's a possibility. But I think that if we work for the overall good as coaches, as a group, as a team, we have an opportunity here. And we can't really separate human nature from learning. But so we have to focus on the learning. And I think that when we do that, we get quality outcome rather than this, what I see, blindness to activity, like frenetic pace, useless, whatever, I mean,
mm-hmm.
driven by desperation, but it doesn't, it doesn't work. I mean, a lot of people,
right.
I'm not the only one saying that, you know. There's many leaders saying that.
Right. And well, and then just like you said, our economy, there's plenty of evidence here in the United States, especially the Wall Street crash of 2008. Banks were making such short-sighted decisions and so many companies focus on just next quarter's earnings expectations instead of the long-term view, what's going to be best for their customers in the long term, what's going to be best for their employees in the long term. So I believe that all of that in our economy is an unsustainable model, so I'm thrilled that you're working with leadership teams to change that, change their mindset.
I'm trying my best.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing a great job, too. Well, one last thing, well, two things. If you're listening offline and you want to be alerted to future shows of Coach Conversation, go to ICF Phoenix on Facebook, and you'll be, if you like us, then you'll be able to follow us there, and we always post our next shows there. Our next show will be on Friday, December 13th at 2 o'clock Phoenix time, 1 o'clock Pacific time, and 4 o'clock Eastern time. And that will be where I'll have the privilege of interviewing Tamara Stark. Tamara's one of key leaders in the ICF Phoenix chapter and has been a key player in our Blog Talk Radio show for 2.5 years. When I've been tied up with client commitments or family commitments, she's been our host. And so she's hosted many shows and been a great contributor, and it'll be great for her story with all of us. And again, blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix or our Facebook page, facebook.com/ICF Phoenix or Audrea Trohill's webpage, website, www.positrakcoaching.com. So thank you so much, Audrey, for sharing your wisdom.
You're very welcome.
Yes, and I look forward to getting to participate in your training at some point. I've been trained by you before, and I look forward to more of it.
Thank you.
Yes,
and you're going to send
you.
Me the link, I hope, so I can put it on my site.
Of course,
and then
of
people
course.
Can listen.
Yes, of course. We'll share that.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, being so generous with us today.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And good, thank you, and goodbye to everybody. Hopefully everybody found some use about what I said.
Oh, I'm confident. They got tremendous value. Confident. So thanks again.
You're welcome, Catherine. Bye-bye.
Bye.